Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, and I'd like to welcome you to this program. Today, the latest in health and healing and what we can do to reverse brain aging, how we can also help ourselves become more intelligent, because the latest study shows that human intelligence peaked thousands of years ago, and we're just getting dumber. A more in-depth analysis today of something that will benefit everyone listening: cellular energy, your metabolism, how to get more of it so you have that pep and vigor all the time, where you can wean yourself away from, well, caffeine and sugar and those little soft drink breaks. Kirk Stokoe on restoring cellular energy. I'll also give you the latest on PQQ. It's good. It promotes mitochondrial energy. From our environmental segment today, Fukushima. They're having trouble there. I'll tell you what it is. Also, HAARP, H-A-A-R-P. It's a destructive weather pattern that we've created. What role, if any, does it play in the destruction of whales and dolphins and other aquatic life? How can it alter weather patterns? Has it contributed to any of the natural disasters that we are seeing? If time allows, I want to challenge and offer a different perspective on this idea of American military exceptionalism. Anyone who listens knows I do not deal in topical news. I won't talk about Petraeus or the scandals. I don't have sports discussion. I don't talk about entertainment news. None of those topical issues are important to our program. But I do focus upon social issues that impact our well-being, individually, collectively, as a society. I'm going to talk about discrediting the U.S. military power, Tom Englehart, from thomasdispatch.com. I will be opening up our lines for your calls on our talkback segment. Let's begin. Many of you know that I'm a certified organic farmer, and I also have bees. I've had beehives and looked after bees for a long time. And they're very important because they provide pollination. I don't take anything from the bees. I leave it all for them: the honey, the propolis, the royal jelly. But for those who are able to incorporate bees into their backyard, if your zoning allows, they can give you a lot. If not, then here's what you should know. Bees can help reverse brain aging and may hold clues for Alzheimer's. Now, this is from the peer-reviewed journal Experimental Gerontology. A team of scientists from Arizona State University and the Norwegian University of Life Sciences found that when they took a look at the bees, they learned a lot that could help us. Quote, "We knew from previous research that when bees stay in the nest and take care of larvae, the bee babies, they remain mentally competent for as long as we observe them. However, after a period of nursing, bees fly out, gathering food, and begin aging very quickly. After just 2 weeks, foraging bees have worn wings, hairless bodies, and more importantly, they lose their brain function, basically measured as an ability to learn new things. We wanted to find out if there was something special going on that we could grow from." Quote, "What would happen if we asked the foraging bees to take care of larva babies again?" Meaning those that had already taken care of the larva, then they were out there searching for food. Could they get this? Researchers discovered that after 10 days, about 50% of the older bees caring for the nest and larva had significantly improved their ability to learn new things. Maybe social interventions, changing how you deal with your surroundings, is something we can do to help our brains stay younger. And since the proteins being researched in people are the same proteins bees have, these proteins may be able to spontaneously respond to specific social experiences, end quote. Now, what does this mean in just regular lay language? And by the way, I am broadcasting live from our studios in New York City and video streaming, if you'd like to watch the show, over ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com or GaryNall.com. Let us go back in time to when I was the youngest member of the research team at the Institute of Applied Biology, which primarily did research into drugs for pain, chemotherapy agents, lots of oncologists doing research there. It was very orthodox. I was invited to be a part of the team, but to be separate in that I'd proposed to the director of the institute a paper that showed that in addition to the chemotherapy that they were advocating and using and associated with the hospital across the street, Trafalgar Hospital, that a person's nutritional profile was very important, that if you gave them very good foods and you watched their diet, then it allowed the orthodox therapy to work better. That was it. Now, I knew that it was a lot more, but I didn't want to scare them off, and so they gave me a chance, and indeed, after about a year, the formulas I was working with the nutritionists, I was also a registered dietitian and a nutritionist, at the Trafalgar Hospital, it began to have improvements, meaning the cancer patients were getting better. Then, in a meeting, I said, it doesn't matter whether you're a cancer patient or a drug addict or an alcoholic, your body is still under the same stress, biochemical stress. So vitamin C or a good meal is going to help all of them. So then I expanded out. And then over about another 3 years, I was working with thousands of drug addicts and helping them to detoxify naturally, not just on methadone, which is what they were advocating. I was giving protocols that included intravenous vitamins and B-complex and niacin. In effect, I was able to help a lot of them go cold turkey without the delirium tremens and the projectile vomiting and the very radical fluctuations in their body temperature, shaking on a bed. I've seen all that. Instead, the detoxification process worked. Now, later, I was able to get my own lab in the building on the top floor that they use for storage. They had all this junky equipment. I threw it all out, repainted it, and set up my lab up there. And what I noticed is downstairs they had thousands of rats. And rats are generally kept in little tiny plastic containers with a metal grid on top with a bottle of water. And they put rat pellets in there and they reach up and chew through the rat pellets and eat them. The box is small. I'm going to guess about 7 or 8 inches wide, maybe a foot long, maybe 7 or 8 inches tall. It's very cramped quarters. And sometimes I'd have two rats in a box. In any case, there was always the same outcome. I mean, always. The rats lived their normal life, which was, depending upon the breed of rat, anywhere from 12 months to a year and a half, some 2 years. But they always got overweight. They did a lot of tail biting. Cannibalism was common. And there's lots of fighting. So when I went upstairs, I asked for their older rats, rats that would be nearing their senescence, meaning the end of their life. And because these rats no longer served any purpose for them, instead of putting them in cages, I built a wonderful environment in this large area. They could be free to go anywhere they want, but every day I hid their food someplace else. I gave them, I remember taking a bathtub and surrounding it with material and making it look like a lake. And they had soft music, light classical music. There was natural light, so they got full spectrum light. And to the amazement of the head of the institute, I was able to get these rats to lose the excess body fat, regain their energy and vigor, fed them living in foods, meaning no heavy cooked foods at all, lots of juices. In fact, I'd make every morning, I would make all types of celery, apple, cucumber, wheatgrass juice, not carrot, but almost every other thing I juiced, that's what I fed them. Now, here's the outcome of this. By giving them different challenges, so I would change the music, I would change the place of their food, I would put up little mazes for them. It excited them. In other words, it created a challenging environment. They lived almost 20% longer. They had energy. In fact, when we measured them in a simple treadmill experiment, they were back to where they were when they were young in their energy. So they had vigor, vitality, health, and that was the beginning of my work on anti-aging. I did hundreds of experiments, and I then worked with humans using the same formula. And what I found was is that we get bored as humans, but so do animals. And we need excitement. We need challenges. But how do we challenge ourselves when our whole world is made for us to be passive? We're just to be spectators. If you're bored, if you're not excited by something, just turn on television, go to a movie, go to a play, go to a concert, read a book, read an article, listen to someone, go to a lecture. Those are passive. That means you don't have to challenge yourself. You're just a recipient. Now, you might enjoy what you're being exposed to, and I'm not questioning that, but there's a whole big difference when you turn off the television, turn off the radio, stop distracting yourself, and actually become creative. I'm a big believer that we can heal through art. That means healing through being creative. I believe that we can heal trauma. I've seen it. I've given people opportunities when I'm counseling them, encouraging them to write about their trauma and to look at it differently. First, how did it impact you? How did you maladapt because of it? How did that impact your perceptions, your beliefs, your reality, your disciplines, your determination? Now, let's go back and wipe that clean. Now, rewrite an outcome that has a happy ending, that is positive. We can't change what happened to you. We can change how you should perceive it. We've all been abused. We've all been betrayed. We've all been traumatized by different people, some that we've trusted, some when we were young and disempowered, others older, all of us. Therefore, that can't change. And if we try to hide it, the energy of it stays connected to our essential being, which means, now this is a separate concept, but it's certainly appropriate here, that you can never grow any more in life than your weakest link. So we master things that gives us, many of us, many, many people, exceptional insights and skills and talents. We've all met people, or we are those people who, when we do something that we've mastered, we do it effortlessly. We do it with an ease that other people are impressed by because they think, wow, I couldn't do that. Well, we've done it so often, we've done it to our perfection. That's good. I don't know a person that hasn't perfected many things, but it's what we chose not to focus on, our traumas, our pains, the betrayals. We stay connected to that. So we have to walk in the path of our pain, not away from it, not disguise it, not try to deny it, not say, well, get over it. That just means that you're not facing it. You've substituted something else for the pain, but it's still there. It's bearing witness to every thought you have. It sits on your shoulder. So why not just face it, try to understand its message, be strengthened by it, and find a positive solution for it. That's completely doable. And so I saw it with the mice. Had I not taken them upstairs and created a more open environment, one they had never experienced before, not broken up their routine, so they didn't have the food, the same quantity, the same taste, the same amount every day. Different foods, different locations, try to find it, re-engage their senses of smell. They would have died in their normal period of time. As a result, they had a quality of life, including human contact, because I would sit there, and if you were one of the thousands upon thousands who spent time at night, I built a glass wall and put a whole bunch of seats down there, as many as 40 people could sit, and there were times at 2 in the morning when there were 40 people there. Scientists, doctors, healers, artists, all kinds of people would come at night to see what kind of experiments I was doing. I would tell people my experiments, especially my psi experiments. They were more interesting than my health experiments. But people had a chance, and they would sit there and see all these rats everywhere, sometimes 1,000 rats, no cages, no cannibalism, no obesity, no fighting, completely tame, never was bitten once in 30 years, not a single bite. And if you haven't experienced that, then that's a reality worth noting. But I translated that into working with humans. So now you get a person who is depressed or anxious, who has terminal cancer, who has high blood pressure, who's overweight, who is diabetic, and you ask them, what can we do to make your life more exciting, to get out of habits, to get out of your comfort zone? And the ease is in doing something new. The pain, the suffering, the trauma of change is, I don't want to give up what is comfortable. But what if your comfort is based upon something that's killing you, like the food you're eating, the drugs you're taking, the tranquilizers you're taking, the alcohol you're consuming, the pot you're smoking? What if that's causing you problems? And that's only going to exacerbate it. And still, the hidden ghost in the room remains. It will never abandon you. It will sit forever as the pushback to every positive choice, every joyful, enlightened moment. You'll see the shadow coming over you. That's the unresolved conflict. So by working with a person with terminal cancer who's 70 years old and getting them to feel like they're starting their life over and start thinking and creating, and you start saying, okay, what projects would you like to? And then they're just dumbstruck. What do you mean? I'm here because I got terminal cancer. Well, we both know that. All right. I'm not going to talk with your cancer cells today or a therapy about your cancer. I think your life is more important than the disease that you are experiencing. Would you agree or disagree? What do you mean? Well, every thought you have is about dying, being in a coffin, being cremated, no longer there, all your possessions gone, everything you valued gone, the people you know gone, you're never going to see them again in this lifetime. I know that that's what you're thinking. I've spoken with tens of thousands of people who are terminal or are sick. It is a normal fear. Even people who are not terminal or sick, once they hit a certain age, they realize there's an expiration date on their body. And because they're not willing to change anything, it's times against them. So why don't we put life first, your joy and happiness first, and make the cancer be second or third? And it's hard for some to get their mind around it, but once they get into doing things they have never done, changing their patterns, changing their diet, changing where they go, what they watch, what they listen to, and make sure every single thing they do has something that empowers them. The key is empower every day. Empower your thoughts. Take back control over your life. And that's the reason that the other protocols that come after that, then the diet, the detoxification, the immune stimulation, the anti-cancer specific protocols, then they work far better with a very high rate of success, because the foundation upon which all therapies rest is the quality and integrity of a person's life, not fighting a cancer or a depression. So when the bees that are almost worn out and ready to die, when they are given an opportunity to be caregivers again, and they rejuvenate themselves, and they develop their hair back and their wings and heal and other things come back. They're actually de-aging. That tells us what could happen with humans. I've seen it in animals and I've seen it in humans. That's why next year, or not next year, just in a few months, I'm going to be working with a group of people separate from my Alzheimer's health support group for your seniors who are going to try to reverse their aging process for a year. And that's not for everyone. That's only for those who are really committed to making major changes. And that means bringing more ideas. Remember, most of what we do in life is enjoy the thought and energy of an idea. It is the idea that excites us. We're always more inspired by the idea of something than what actually happens, and then the idea of what we've experienced we can expand on afterwards. It's the energy of the experience we can hold with us and make it a remarkable moment. The key is most people who live such boring lives are so unmotivated to be proactive, are so non-inspired to be original, that they just live passively looking at everyone else and thinking, well, okay, I'm just going to watch everything else in my life go by until my life is by. And I'm saying, not a good idea. Next up, researchers recommend increasing the dietary allowance for vitamin C. And this was at the Oregon State University Linus Pauling Institute. They're saying that 75 milligrams of vitamin C for a woman, 90 milligrams for men is just not enough. Minimally, you should have 200 milligrams. This was published in the peer-reviewed journal, Critical Reviews in Food Sciences and Nutrition. I would say that they are substantially off. They're not even doing good basic science, because I believe that if you took any individual and you who had any illnesses and you did a review of their vitamin C level, you're going to find this grossly understated. I believe 2,000 milligrams, not 200 milligrams, 2,000 milligrams a day is minimum, absolutely minimum that we should be consuming a day, and that should be divided in doses throughout the day. Also, we now know that to help support those who have chronic kidney disease, according to the Journal of Renal Nutrition, and done it at a National Kidney Foundation, that we should be ingesting omega-3 fatty acids. And in this scientific study, it was a double-blind, randomized, placebo-controlled study in non-dialysis chronic kidney disease patients. They found that compared to a placebo, a use of just 1,000 milligrams of DHA with olive fruit extract and sesame lignans at 20 milligrams and 600 milligrams, that there was a substantial improvement overall. So that's good news. So if you know anyone who has kidney problems, the omega-3 fatty acids, 1,000 to 2,000 milligrams a day, 600 milligrams of olive fruit extract, and 20 milligrams of sesame lignans, L-I-G-N-A-N-S. Now for a little more in-depth analysis. Oh, by the way, just this latest study I mentioned at the beginning of the program, according to Common Dream staff, our intelligence, all of humankind's intelligence, peaked thousands of years ago, and advanced civilization has made life so easy for so many that our trend towards stupidity will continue as the ingenuity and intellect once needed for basic survival erode even further. This, anyway, is the argument in a new study, In Trends in Genetics, authored by Stanford University Professor Gerald Crabtree. Quote, in the past, when our ancestors and those who failed to become our ancestors faced the harsh realities of a hunter-gatherer lifestyle, the punishment for stupidity was more often than not death. And so, enormous evolutionary pressure bore down on early humans, selecting out the dimwits and raising the intellect of the survivor's descendants. But not so today. I would wager that if an average citizen from Athens, Greece, of 1000 BC were to appear suddenly among us, He or she would be among the brightest and most intelligently active and alive of all of our colleagues and companions. With a good memory, a broad range of ideas, and a clear-sighted view of important issues. Furthermore, I would guess that he or she would be among the most emotionally stable of our friends and colleagues. I would also make this wager for the ancient habitats of Africa, Asia, India, or the Americas. Of perhaps 2,000 to 6,000 years ago, the basis for my wager comes from new developments in genetics, anthropology, and neurobiology that make a clear prediction that our intellectual and emotional abilities are genetically surprisingly fragile. End quote. And this was from Professor Robin Dunbar, anthropologist, Oxford University, on, that was from Professor Crabtree. So, interesting. And again, go back to what I was suggesting. We live passive lives today. We've lost our intellectual capacity. We're losing our capacity for vocabulary, syntax. We have a highly illiterate young group of people in America today. So, something to think about. One more reason to turn off so much of what distracts us and turn on your creativity. Be more creative in everything you do. Remember, everything you do is just an exchange of energy. So ask yourself, if I wake up in the morning and I go in there and I put some bread in the toaster to make toast, and if I pour some sugar-coated processed cereal into a bowl and put milk in it, or if I open up a bottle of pasteurized orange juice, I have a choice and I've made it. But what if I chose to make a glass of fresh juice or make a smoothie with lots of nuts and seeds and coconut oil and flaxseed oil and some compounding powders? My choice will give me a different energy. That will be a healing energy that turns off inflammation. The first energy, the toast, the coffee, the cereal, or the bacon and eggs, that's all pro-inflammatory. That will cause my body to prematurely age. I will end up attacking my own body. How smart is that? And yet it's predictable because it's easy. I'm in my comfort zone. So let's get out of our comfort zone. And finally today from our health and nutrition segment, first up, I've had a lot of questions about PQQ. Okay, PQQ was first brought to our attention when some research was done to show that it supports our mitochondrial biogenesis, meaning the spontaneous generation of new energy cells. Now, the mitochondria are little energy factories. It's like having a little fuel tank in our body. It generates ATP, adenosine triphosphate, and that gives the cell the ability to have energy. Now, we know that the mitochondria are cellular energy generators that supply virtually all the power your body requires for a healthy lifespan. An abundance of literature, I'm talking about hundreds of articles, shows that the mitochondria, as they deplete, we age. Especially in your heart, your brain, you have an enormous amount of mitochondria in your heart and your brain. Well, until recently, the only natural ways of aging individuals to increase the number of mitochondria in their bodies were long-term caloric restrictions or exhaustive physical activity. Well, PQQ offers a viable alternative to that. Why? Because here's what you should know about PPQ. PPQ protects and augments delicate mitochondrial structures and promotes youthful cellular function in three ways. First, you have the antioxidant power. Like coenzyme Q10, PQQ is a highly potent antioxidant. Its extraordinary molecule has stability. It enhances thousands of biochemical reactions in the mitochondria without breaking down. And then it gives a favorable modulation of our gene expression. PQQ activates genes that promote formation of new mitochondria and beneficially interacts with genes directly involved in mitochondrial health. These same genes also support your healthy body weight, your normal fat and sugar metabolism, and youthful cellular proliferation. And finally, the mitochondrial defense, so important, because your mitochondria possesses their own DNA. distinct from the DNA contained in the nucleus. Unfortunately, compared to the nuclear DNA, mitochondrial DNA is relatively unprotected, and PQQ's antioxidant potency and favorable gene expression profile act to support mitochondrial defense. PQQ is an essential nutrient, meaning your body cannot make it on its own. I suggest, for healthy heart cell protection and function, 20 milligrams twice a day. Now, of course, if you're sick or have other conditions, it could be a lot more than that, but that's a way of getting you started. All right? I'm Gary Noll, back in a moment. Please stay with us. To welcome all of you who are just joining us, our wonderful audience, PFW in Washington, D.C., WBAI in New York, and KPFK in Los Angeles, but stations all over the United States and around the world. In this segment of our program, I'm going to talk about a challenge to the idea of military supremacy and this whole notion that we have such love and respect for our military that we don't realize what we're doing to take the food out of hungry children's mouths, 18 million, in order to give it to the military-industrial complex. I'll deal with that. Also, I'll deal with our environmental segment on Fukushima, the problems they're having, and HAARP. Before we go there, however, I just want to mention a few program announcements. One, for those of you who have specific carpentry, highly defined carpentry, masonry, plumbing skills, I'm now going to be hiring some people for a homesteading project. Not in New York, and good paying, you have to move out of state for a while. But you can call our number. I'm going to give you Jason's number so you can call. And 646-926-5422. Also, don't forget that coming up on December 6th is the world premiere of our new film on genetic engineering, and it is powerful. I'm up there all day long in our editing suite watching and selecting the clips that we're putting in there, including new footage that we just filmed that just came in this morning. You won't want to miss this. This is going to give you so much information and insight. You'll be able to use this. Share this with people, and you're going to get a copy of the film at the premiere, plus a book. It's only $30. You can get a reservation online, or you can call 646-926-5422 if you'd like to join me. It will be sold out. It will be packed. But we can't have people standing, and we can't have people in the aisles, as we did on Sunday down in Washington, D.C., where a whole auditorium, a gigantic auditorium, was just, you couldn't move in there. It was so packed. Nice people, too, by the way. Wonderful energy. Lots of fun, lots of laughter. We had a ball. Could you imagine a premiere of a movie, then three back-to-back full lectures? People stayed for 7 hours. That was a lot of fun. That was a fundraiser for PFW. So call if you want to join me, because I'm only doing one premiere in New York. That's it. One night, one showing on December 6th, Thursday night, 7 o'clock. 646-926-5422. For those of you who could not make it in, and including some of my nutritionists on staff, could not make it in because they lived on Long Island and they are New Jersey. Now they're all back to work. So our full staff is back to work helping people for free as a public service with your health and nutrition needs. But not if you are terminally ill. Those individuals must contact me. They won't be able to help you. But on everything else, they give a lot of help and they've helped tens of thousands of people. You don't have to pay them a penny because I give them a good salary and benefits and health care. So you can just call them and then go in and see them. Their number is 212-874-4000. 212-874-4000. You'll find them to be very qualified, very skilled. My special for today, it's a good one. Brand new label, by the way. I'm holding it up here. Beautiful. This is the product that did not exist. Until I realized that we just weren't doing the kind of aloe in the United States that we should. So I went down to the Rio Grande Valley of Texas. I found the right organic farm growing only the finest quality aloe vera. And I wanted the highest standards. It was processed right after being hand cut. And the whole leaf is processed because my science background showed me that most of the nutrients that really benefit us from aloe vera are in the leaf, not in the gel. And then I wanted hand-blended herbs. Siberian ginseng, the most commonly used herb in the world, gotocola, wild yam for the women, ginger, and peppermint extracts. I wanted it to be flash, meaning only just a pop of heat so that the bacteria don't have to be there, and then it's set in barrels for a long period of time to grow out, and then cultures are taken to make sure it's pure. And then the rabbi is there during the whole process to make sure that everything is kosher, it's certified kosher, and there's nothing like it. Wild yam root extract, ginger root extract, peppermint leaf extract, yeah. Raspberry, black cherry. That's what I have. So, aloe barbadensis leaf, that's what we have. This is the ultimate, absolutely delicious tasting aloe vera juice. The whole leaf aloe vera. Natural cherry berry flavor. It is gluten-free. It is non-genetically modified. It is vegan. There is no water. It is concentrated. There are no sulfites. The standards are the best. And this is kosher parve. And it's a big bottle. It is heavenly aloe. It's on sale. I take it every day. I suggest you take 2 ounces in the morning. And it is tremendous. Just look on the internet under aloe vera, and you'll see hundreds of things that it does for you. There's a big special on it. You're going to get this large 33.8-ounce liter. You're going to get two heavenly aloe vera for $47.99. Two bottles, okay? Call this number, 877-627-5065, 877-627-5065, 877-627-5065, and get one of the most important, powerful, all-inclusive. It would be in my top five things to take every day. Of all the things in nature I could take, this is one of the top five. I do not go a day without it, and I take a lot more than that. I want to take a lot more than 2 ounces. Because I know what it does. And it's on sale. That's our special of the day. Now, I'd like to welcome all of you very quickly. Let's go to the environmental news. Fukushima operators struggle to contain outrageous amounts of radioactive water. I'll quote this. Operators of Fukushima's Daiichi plant are having trouble storing up perpetual accumulation of radioactive cooling water from the plant's broken reactors, the plant's water treatment manager told Associated Press this week. The plant currently holds 200,000 tons, that's tons, of highly contaminated wastewater used to cool the broken reactors. But operator Tokyo Electric Power Company continues to struggle to find ways to store the toxic substance. TEPCO has said that they are running out of room to build more storage tanks, and the volume of water will be more than triple within 3 years. Quote, it's a time-pressing issue because the storage of contaminated water has its limits. There's only limited storage space. So why not bring in all the top experts in the world to help you solve your problem? You're going to have to get this entire, all those suspended spent fuel rods, that if they fall, if there's an earthquake, if the building continues to sink, it sunk 3 feet, and all this breaks, all of Japan will be permanently, forever contaminated, tens of millions will be exposed, and a lot of people are going to die. So why not do something about it? And nothing right now is in the world news about it. And Big Pharma is testing OxyContin on children as young as 6 to keep their patent, quote from Elizabeth Renter of Natural Society. You've likely heard of OxyContin. It's that heavy-duty narcotic painkiller, the one that's spurred the prescription drug addiction problem to new heights over the past several years. It's highly addictive. So addictive, in fact, that it is said to lead people to using heroin in order to get a cheaper high when their budget can't keep up with their OxyContin habit. Well, the maker of this wonder drug, responsible for countless overdose deaths, is so concerned with their patent running out, they decided to test the drug on children as young as 6 years old. The company is Purdue Pharma, LP, and their concern isn't in helping children overcome some deadly illness or debilitating pain, but instead lies, not surprisingly, with their bottom line. The patent of OxyContin is set to expire in August of this year. When that occurs, other big pharma companies will be able to make generic versions of the pricey narcotic and sell them for much cheaper, taking some of Purdue's profits. By starting new trials on children, Purdue Pharma is able to extend their patent by 6 months. They're able to do this with a program from the Food and Drug Administration that actually encourages drug companies to test their poisons on the youngest members of our communities. End quote. Okay. Let us say hello to people in this audience. Your turn to call in and ask your questions, make your statements. It's our Talk Back segment. Our number to call in is 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. Also, let me remind you that if for any reason we are preempted, which we've been the last few days on WBAI, you can always listen to my show, which I continue to broadcast from our Progressive Radio Network studios. They're just not taking the feed on days when they're doing certain programming, like archive programming, which we understand and fully support. But you can continue to listen to my live show by calling 832-280-0066, 832-280-0066. Let's say hello to who's on the line now, and we have Luann Panessi on the line now. Hi, Luann.
Hello, Gary. Just an aside, you know, I've had many people who have contacted me to ask questions, and I have a number of people in your audience that have said that they take your aloe vera and they drink it like a glass of juice. I mean, they love it. And I never heard of anyone being able to just take aloe out of a bottle and drink it. They usually have to mix it with something because of the taste. But the taste of your aloe is just, it's above and beyond. So it's a great, great product. I have an email here from a woman named Sean, and she said, I listen to you every Wednesday morning on KPFK in California, and he says, I have for 7 years. It's allowed me to make major corrections in my life. I've never felt as energized and healthy. My skin, which was a problem in the past, is now clear and smooth. And she says, I brought two friends to see you when you were last in L.A. We stayed for the entire day, and it was the most exciting day I can remember. And my friends left so uplifted and empowered. He says, but when I see all of your books and documentaries and I hear your travel schedule and all the demonstrations and the other work that you do, I don't understand how you get it all done. So yes, could you address the whole concept of organizing your life so that you can be more productive? And also, I hope you don't mind me asking a personal question, but why is it that you don't have a relationship? I'm guessing she means a romantic relationship. My friends, both women, commented on the quality of time that you spend with people. And she said, if it's too personal, I understand. If not, I think it would give us all perspective, because most of us only talk about the relationships that fail or the relationships that we hope for. And she'd like to get your perspective on healthy relationships.
Well, she's asked three questions. I'll be happy to address all three. The reason that I have been so busy for the past 5 years is because I saw what was ahead of us. And I decided that I, too, might not be able to afford to create the public service projects, the documentaries, the in-depth investigative reporting that I do, which requires travel and phone and research. And also, I saw a perfect storm. It wasn't as if one thing was going to happen bad. I saw this prior to the meltdown in the subprime market. When I asked my neighbor, who was 90 years old, when I saw him one day over there, why he was moving, he said, I can't afford to live here anymore. I said, why so? He said, because the property taxes keep going up every single year, and I just can't afford to pay them. I live on just Social Security. So between all my other expenses and my wife is sick, I just can't. And so I'm having to sell this place. And he'd lived there before I came there. And I've been there 18 years. And I had indeed saw my taxes go up 7 times in 7 years. Everybody was living in a bubble. And very few people were willing to acknowledge the danger of that bubble. If your house 10 years ago was worth $100,000, and then in 2007 it was worth, let's say, $300,000, you thought you were lucky because your house was valued at $200,000 more. The vast majority of people in America took advantage of that increase in the value of their home and took that money out. So they withdrew their equity, whether for their kids to go to school or for other improvements or things they needed, but they didn't save. So our savings went down and our spending went out of control. The average American, not all Americans, but the average American simply was living beyond anything that would be considered reasonable and prudent. Then when I saw this coming, so I just decided I'm going to do as much work as I can, always considering the worst. I always plan for the worst and hope for the best, because I also saw our environmental degradation. I've been working already 2 years on a documentary on the 12 tipping points, and I saw that we weren't about politically to change anything that causes global warming. In fact, we weren't able to get people to stop using, non-biodegradable materials. So at every level, we failed. There wasn't a single area where we actually did something smart. We increased our consumption of sugar and meat. We got more disease. We consume more plastics and other things. We polluted more of our environment. We let our industries run amok. So a complete prescription. You don't have to be psychic. Just look at what we're doing and look at the lack of political will, which is controlled by lobbyists and industries that are not about to spend money improving their incineration or improving their recovery of their byproducts. So that's why I decided to do as many projects as I could to help as many people in as many areas I thought would be important, hence environmental issues such as this film on genetic engineering coming out shortly, the ones on medicine like death by medicine, the ones on our government bureaucracy such as the war on health, the ones on vaccines. So that's how I selected my projects. But to do those projects, I write, direct, and produce them. So no one else does that. So I had to go out and do that. And that took a lot of time. What I did was I simply balanced it, where I'd been doing a great deal of training in racing. I simply did a whole lot less training in racing and more on this. And as a result, we've had 12 documentaries come out in the last 5 years, 6 in the last year alone. And there'll be 6 next year. So that's why I put my mind to something, but I also create balance. Every single day, I set time aside to do my exercise, to do something that helps people or strangers, to honor my spiritual self, to set time aside to challenge myself creatively and intellectually, and to show, spend time with creatures or people that are important to me. So there's balance in that curve of a 24-hour cycle. But no time is wasted. I won't sit in front of a television. I won't have the radio on. I won't be taking phone calls that mean nothing. I just don't do that. On the other end, the reason I am not in a an interpersonal relationship, but I do have wonderful friendships, is because it would not be fair to anyone I would be having a relationship with. I believe that when you have a relationship that's important to you and the other person, that you must also make that a priority. You must have time and energy that is undivided and separate from anything you're doing in your work, so that the quality time you spend with someone is unique. It is impassioned. It is romantic. It is creative. And if I can't do that, then I would not be having an authentic relationship. And with my time being devoted to so many things, I mean, you're aware of what I did on Saturday and Sunday. Four lectures Saturday, four lectures Sunday, plus traveling, a total of about 22 hours in 48 hours. Well, where would there be time to spend time with someone? I don't believe that you should, you know, just catch as catch can in a relationship. That's how relationships dissolve. That's where conflict occurs, when too many things are competing with what is important to the two people, quality time together. My last quality relationship was in 2000. And not since. But when my time frees up, when I get to a point where I see that enough is out there to help people, then I will reestablish time for that relationship. But until that time clears up, I won't, because it simply would not be fair. And the last question is, the way that you have a quality relationship is bring the best that you are as a human being into in to share with someone, and look at the best that they are to share with them. When you're sharing the best that you are, then that relationship will sail. It will be wonderful. You'll have just so many remarkable moments. But before you have that relationship with another, you first have to be honest and authentic with yourself and resolve your weakest points, because it is only a matter of sooner rather than later, when you're into a relationship, that the worst you are, your hidden side, the side you've neglected or denied or apologized for, made excuses for, that is going to come in. And then you've just polluted the relationship. You will change the energy that's exchanged, and you will create a mess. And hence, most relationships that I'm aware of are just a mess. I wish to were otherwise. For those who don't have that, who have harmony all the time, good for them. Otherwise, we think that the new norm is have a dysfunctional relationship like a Woody Allen film and spend all of your time trying to cope with it, right? So you wake up in disharmony. You don't like where you're working. You don't like the person you're with, or there's something you don't like about them, or what you did like about them you're no longer enjoying because what you don't like has superseded it. And you shouldn't ever use a relationship as a therapy session. If someone needs therapy, let them go and get their therapy. Let them get their life together. Let them get their balance and then find the relationship. I just find so many people today are so dysfunctional. And why in the world would any reasonable person want to put themselves in a dysfunctional position? Just doesn't make sense to me. Hope that answers the question, Luann. Thank
you. Sure does.
Let's say hello to Joe from New Jersey. Hi, Joe.
Yes, hello. I guess my main comment is just, I feel like, you know, I listen to your program a lot, and I, you know, I'm especially a big fan of Chris Hedges and, you know, different guests. And I think that, like, I was hoping that you would consider some type of forum to help people like me that are in the trenches as for, you know, being a more effective activist. And couple nights ago, I stood in front of a selection committee for the next president of Princeton and voiced my concerns about where they're, you know, basically they're the Ivy League to Wall Street pipeline, and that, you know, it's they're, you know, they're the, one of the biggest feeder schools for Wall Street firms. That's what someone else, you know, called them. And also, you know, I spoke about, you know, I referred to the author Harry Lewis, you know, and he wrote a book called Excellence Without a Soul. But the situation is that, you know, I did that, and there's going to be, you know, there could be ramifications for what I stood up and was being honest on the lack of what they do for our community and stuff. But I think that thing is sometimes it's really hard to be out there kind of pressing these issues.
Okay, Joe, let's focus on your original statement. First, this is the forum for progressive minds in the whole world. You have no idea how many people tune in, download shows, read articles, get information that they can take back into their communities or into their issue-based communities where it might be a parent who has suffered the child with autism and vaccine connection but knows nowhere to go. So we provide the tools for that person and the organizations that they can join to, Ms. Abascus in New Jersey and her group. So it's networking people into proactive groups that are joined together, and then they're lobbying or they're writing letters or they're making an issue, but they're doing it together. And hence that solidarity creates a power base. We do that with at least 52 different categories, whether it's gas hydrofracking or anti-nuclear or pro Gulf War vet. That's what we do. There are thousands and thousands and thousands of articles on Progressive Radio Network's website, and there's all that information. There's documentaries, including free, that you can download. All of those are designed to be tools for social improvement. So you have the tools. We're working on this every day. And I would have been less concerned about being at Princeton and, as you said, challenging the pipeline that goes from Princeton to Wall Street, because that's not going to change, than I would have been at Princeton and asking those students who are progressive, and they do certainly have progressive students in every campus, why don't we join together to see what we can do to get rid of the student debt and the student interest and the draconian laws that prevent us from filing bankruptcy, because that's something that's very intimate to a student. Either they've signed or their parents have co-signed or grandparents co-signed, which means they're now going to go through a debt peonage for years to come. That would be a better fight to fight at Princeton or any other university. Also, you have a lot of the different groups out there, the Occupy groups that are coming from college campuses, and I would align with those. All the best to you. We'll take another call here. Let's say hello to Ed. Hi, Ed. Your turn.
Oh, hello, Gary. How are you today?
Great.
Gary, thanks so much for all the great information that you give on health and wellness, and especially the information on the economy and our world in general. It's always just so good to listen to, informative, and needed by so many people around the world. And in terms of that, I was just wondering, are you ever thinking of maybe creating any kind of ongoing retreat type of situation for people to perhaps come and spend a week or two at to learn more in depth about the things that I think are ever growing in people's minds that are really beneficial, but then it all gets clouded by what they're seeing in the print or on TV or hearing around them. And so I'm just wondering if you're ever toying with that idea of creating something such as that for the future.
It's not the future. It's happening in a few months. I've been working on this and building this and included inclusive into a veterans village and an artisan's village, a lot of different things I'm working on. But this is actual reality. It's not an idea for the future. But where I would be different is that I don't believe that an activist community would be one that would be constructive. Instead, I'm going to have what I call a Remarkable Minds Forum, much like a Socrates Forum, where once a month one of the great thinkers in the world will come and spend a week. And during that week, in special gardens that are being built as we speak, there will be cameras discreetly placed that you won't see, and the person will be mic'd, and as they spend time each day for an hour or two per day in that Socrates garden, these ancient gardens that aesthetically are just completely different than anything that exists right now in the United States, they would put forth on, here are the problems and here are the solutions as they see it. Whatever that might be, whether it's Dr. Satoris coming in to talk about the state of our healthcare system. And the emphasis has to be on a positive solution. All right, we know the problem. What is the solution? And if it's Rabbi Michael Lerner, who's going to be doing a program here, it'll be the same. Or if it's a Chris Hedges, we know the problems. What are your ideas for solutions? So the whole emphasis has to be solutions. And it's all from one person on a different topic per time. And then people all over the world who are listening right now, watching right now, in Ireland, in Uganda, in China, they could then partake of that without actually having to physically be there. There'll be room for a small number of people to be there, yes. But at least this way, the great minds will have a forum that they can come to, a sanctuary they can come to and share solutions. Otherwise, if you just had activists, you're going to have such clashes in ideology that it'd be like a local station a board meeting where everyone's just angry at each other and nothing constructive comes from it. So that's the idea, and it's not just an idea. In a few, 3 or 4 months, it'll be a full-scale reality. Thank you, Ed. I'm looking at the clock and we're out of time. I want to thank all of you for taking your time to listen. If you miss anything, please go to the archives and download shows. And I'm particularly interested in people listening to this last Monday evening's Progressive Commentary Hour. You don't want to miss that. Thank you. Have a nice day. Okay.